It is Friday, November 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, law enforcement authorities try to find out why a former Marine shot dead 12 people at a nightclub in California. Firefighters battled three major wildfires in California, and a house in Germany is now a center for social understanding. It's all ahead. A vigil was held Thursday night in the California town where a gunman killed 12 people at a bar before taking his own life. Police and clergy joined citizens in Thousand Oaks to remember those gunned down by a 28-year-old Marine Corps veteran at the Borderline Bar and Grill. The FBI is examining Ian David Long's home and car for clues to his state of mind before Wednesday's late-night shooting at the bar crowded with students who regularly attended its country music dance party. Shootings are very rare in Thousand Oaks, a city of about 130,000 people, about 64 kilometers west of Los Angeles. President Donald Trump commented on the shooter at the White House Friday.
He's a very sick, it's a mental health problem. He is a very sick puppy. He was a very, very sick guy. Not too many people knew about it, but now that they're looking, they're starting to see. He had a lot of problems, a lot of trouble, and we're very much into that. As you know, I funded a lot of money toward mental health for that reason, and we're continuing to do it, and we continue to look at the laws. We want to make sure, look, it is a problem. It's a disastrous problem. It makes you sick to look at it. But he was a very, very mentally ill person.
One of the victims, Telemachus Orfanos, had already survived the onslaught of another lone gunman at a music festival in Las Vegas last year. Orfanos died Wednesday, less than 10 minutes away from home. VOA's Elizabeth Lee is in Thousand Oaks. She talks with me about the grim situation where one man avoided death in Las Vegas, but was killed in Thousand Oaks.
Yes, that is amazing. I mean, a lot of people who were at the Las Vegas concert and witnessed and experienced the shooting live in this part of greater Los Angeles. It is a bedroom community. It is the suburbs. And so several people, you know, who live here said they survived something so horrific as Las Vegas, and it is just unimaginable that they're hearing about this kind of shooting in their own backyard. And I've talked to one woman who is 22 years old, and she was rushing just the next morning after the shooting in Thousand Oaks to give blood. And she said that it took a year and she's still healing, and she couldn't stop crying when she heard about this. At 3 o'clock in the morning, she gets a phone call from friends asking if she's okay, worried that she may have gone to this country western bar. And she said it is a bar that she goes to, she's gone before. And even now she's afraid to go shopping, to go to the mall, to go to the grocery store. She thinks twice anywhere where there is a large crowd of people gathered. She is afraid. So this has, and she says, It does get easier. You never get used to it. But this kind of new reality in the United States has gotten normalized, and it's desensitizing in many ways.
Yeah, I believe you also spoke to a mother of three who talked to you about, you know, the effect, the impact that all of this is having on her.
Yes, she was on the verge of tears. She has twin girls and a much younger child, just several months old, and she said she felt that she really needed to be out there to do something about it, even though she doesn't know what. That back when she was in school, she's in her 30s, she said when she was in school, all she had to worry about was about the next math test. But now she has to teach her kids that what do you do if there's a shooter? I mean, it's a difficult conversation that mothers will have to have, and she said it's just heart-wrenching, and she felt sick to her stomach that she would have to have these kind of conversations for her young kids or even not so young kids. And kids are used to, depending on what parts of the country, fire drills. tornado drills, even earthquake drills in California, but mothers never thought that they would have to talk about having active shooter drills at school. And so she said something needs to be done to stop this kind of constant, you know, another shooting, a mass shooting in the news. She doesn't know what, but she believes that some sort of more, what she calls it, common sense gun regulation may be a start, but she realizes this is a multifaceted problem. And she said, in many ways, she is living in fear of her kids. And she defines this as a kind of domestic terrorism, that she said that she and many of her other moms are living in a state of fear in their own country, within their own borders, amongst themselves. And she was very emotional when she talked to me, very scared, and really wanted to take action, but doesn't know what it would take.
What have California authorities said about this?
About the incident?
Yes.
Right now, they are, because the shooter was found dead in the bar, so they're trying to kind of figure out what his motive is. The FBI, the federal authorities, have gone to his home, taken his electronic equipment, his computers, trying to get a digital history and hoping to figure out what may have caused this man to, you know, take a gun and go into a bar and shoot 12 people. And, well, he went and shot up the bar and ended up killing 12 people. Now, he was, the only thing we know about him at this point is that he's retired from the Marines. And since he was living at home with his mom, and neighbors report that they've witnessed some erratic behavior from this gentleman and that he wasn't very friendly. So there's suspicion of PTSD, but right now it's too early to tell. Right now it's all speculation, and the officials are trying to meticulously go through all this electronic evidence to try to piece together what may have caused this man to do what he did.
VOA's Elizabeth Lee reporting from Thousand Oaks, California. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. President Donald Trump praises Acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker while distancing himself from the controversial appointee. Three explosions rock Somalia's capital. 27 people are dead, including the gunman. Imelda Marcos is found guilty of corruption in the Philippines, and an Austrian army colonel is suspected of spying for Russia. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The U.S. Geological Survey says 71% of the Earth's surface is covered with water. A couple of recent studies have also suggested that there are oceans of water deep inside our planet's mantle. Scientists suggest after its formation about 4.53 billion years ago, Earth was a dry, hot, and molten planet. A heavy bombardment of water and ice-bearing asteroids and comets several million to a billion years later provided the supply of H2O we rely on today. Now, research by a team of geoscientists from Arizona State University proposes another source of Earth's water they say has been overlooked. The sun and planets were formed from a large cloud of gas and dust containing an abundant supply of hydrogen. The study suggests a combination of all that hydrogen, along with Earth's rocky materials, could be the origin of most of our planet's water. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the political year of the woman proves true here in the United States. We'll have a report. California authorities are battling three major wildfires. VOA's Los Angeles Bureau Chief Mike O'Sullivan tells me about the huge blazes.
The fire in Northern California, which has been very destructive, they're calling it a Camp Fire, and it's near the town of Paradise, which is about a 90-minute drive north of Sacramento in the northern part of the state. They say this town, Paradise, a town of about 27,000 people, has been devastated. Some people are saying nearly destroyed. So there's been widespread destruction there, possibly 1,000 structures burned. And there are two fires burning in northeastern Los Angeles, on the edge of Los Angeles and Ventura counties. They're calling the Hill and the Woolsey fires. Those are smaller, but they're spreading fast. And one of those fires is near the tragic shooting that took place in the city of Thousand Oaks on Wednesday night.
Well, looking at the Paradise Fire, is that situation, I mean, are authorities and fire officials able to get in to try to treat the situation?
Well, you know, they have a mandatory evacuation for that area. Something, there are tens of thousands of people that have been forced out of their homes. And, you know, these are called mandatory evacuations, but authorities only hope that people get out. And typically, they find people who stay and try to fight the fires. A lot of those people have moved to nearby cities like Chico, which is a city of 90,000, but the fire has spread up to the edge of Chico. So it's very tough for the firefighters because they have access to some areas and they have to stay out of others. As the fire approaches a town, they just try to make sure everybody is out and establish a perimeter and do what they can to save the buildings. At a certain point, they have to pull back. So I think they basically lost control of the city of Paradise, but they pour all their resources into these urban areas when they see the fire approaching.
And then meanwhile, there are these two other fires in the Los Angeles area. Certainly that's a very heavily populated area.
That is. It's a northeastern, it's a suburban area. But what has happened, because the population in California is growing so rapidly, is that you see more and more housing, suburban housing, in these rustic areas, the wilderness areas, or at least pushing up to them. So areas like Simi Valley, which is a pleasant suburban area, but it's not far from wooded hillsides. And when the fires hit those areas and you get a strong wind, as we're getting strong winds now blowing in from the desert, what they call Santa Ana winds, which typically come at this time of year, those gusty, strong, gusty, dry winds can blow the hot embers around and carry them sometimes for, you know, a kilometer or more and spread the fire rapidly. And this is what happened yesterday when the 101 freeway, which is a major north-south artery, was closed as the embers blew from one side to the other, burning on both sides, so the authorities just had to close off the freeway.
It does seem that this time of year, California falls victim to these fires.
It happens every year, and it always has, because there's very little rainfall in the summer months, which is July, August, September. And the rain is mostly in December, January, February. So as you approach the rainier season, things are very dry. And again, we typically get those dry desert winds blowing in. So you've got all the conditions for wildfires to spread. And compounding that, in recent years, we've had at least six serious drought years. 2 years ago, we had a good rainfall, but this past year has been very dry, and we're seeing more drought years for whatever reason. You know, the climate may be a natural cycle, but climate change is probably part of it, the experts are telling us. And the more successive drought years you have, the more what they call fuel, combustible fuel, will be on those hillsides just waiting for a spark to combust.
VOA's Los Angeles Bureau Chief Mike O'Sullivan. Americans are sending a record number of women to legislatures around the country. At least 120 female candidates, both Republicans and Democrats, won their races in Tuesday's election. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti reports on this female candidate wave on the national level.
It started with pink because women saw red.
Don't diss us, because we're going to be fighting.
Some say the women marched straight into the House.
This House, the U.S. House of Representatives, where a record number of women, at least 96 of them, will begin their new terms in January. 25 of them are new to politics.
Like Debbie Mucarcel Powell of Florida, who introduced herself to voters in a very unique way.
I've been put down, pushed aside.
And Charisse Davids of Kansas, who is a lesbian and a mixed martial arts fighter. She shares the title of first Native American woman in Congress with Deb Haaland of New Mexico.
I didn't have a role model in Congress, someone, another Native woman that I could go to and ask, how did you do this? What advice can you give me?
This is the year of the woman.
That's Donna Shalala of Florida, a former cabinet secretary who will be the oldest freshman representative at age 77. And then there are the two youngest women in history, 29-year-old Abby Finkenauer of Iowa and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York.
That's exactly what this is, not a campaign or an election day, but a movement.
And that movement elected the first two Muslim women to Congress.
I am Congresswoman-elect Rashida Tlaib.
Tlaib shares the limelight with Ilhan Omar of Minnesota. Republican Young Kim of California appears to have won her election to be the first Korean-American in the U.S. House. And House member Marsha Blackburn became Tennessee's first female senator. The last time women swept into office was 1992, also known as the Year of the Woman. But back then, just 24 were elected to the House and 6 to the Senate. Analysts expect this recent female candidate wave to continue.
Now that women have gotten a taste and a flavor for what that means, they really have broadened goals to be about policy priorities and issues that matter to them.
Just last month, the Interparliamentary Union ranked the U.S. 104th in the world for the number of female legislators serving on the national level.
That change came tonight.
Now, that number is sure to rise. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on The Voice of America.
This is International Edition. With populist movements on the rise in Europe and the United States, the world may feel like it's more divided than ever. But just outside Berlin, Germany, a Jewish family who fled during the Nazi regime is now working with a group of German villagers to create a place where people can connect despite differences in faith, customs, or ethnicity. VOA's Marissa Melton reports.
Thomas Harding is a British author whose book, The House by the Lake, became a bestseller in the UK. It tells the story of his Jewish family's weekend home on the shore of Grosglinicke Lake, a house they only got to enjoy for 9 years before the family fled the country for England. The German government confiscated the property they left behind. Harding was a young adult when he first visited the house in 1993.
I thought it was charming. It was run down, but nice. It had a beautiful view of the lake. I was shocked when I learned that the Berlin Wall had divided it from the lake.
He came back 20 years later at the request of villagers in Grosglinicke who wanted to know more about the Jewish family who had built the house.
Before the war, 25% of the residents were Jewish, and they wanted to know what happened. And during that research is how they reached out to me. And it was because of that, because in many ways they opened the door that we were able to walk through.
Harding's family can't reclaim the house. It now belongs to the city of Potsdam. But they and a group of interested villagers have cleaned it up, and thanks to Harding's book, They've had the house declared a historic monument. The board of Alexander House, as it is now known, is working to turn it into a center for dialogue and reconciliation. There's a group of just under 100 refugees from Syria, Afghanistan, and elsewhere housed at a former military barracks nearby. Alexander House has already held cooking and art events and a soccer tournament as a means of helping villagers and refugees get to know one another. They've also started a student program enabling German and British teens to explore the history of the house and its inhabitants, and to talk about what kind of a future they'd like to build. And while the little house now reaches out to people of all faiths and cultures, the Jewish origin of Alexander House remains important, says Rabbi Stuart Altshuler, for what it says about redemption. Altshuler, an American, leads a London synagogue that was established by German Jews who fled the Nazi regime, Harding's family among them.
It's very important for the Jewish world to know that there's redemption, that there's a sense of moving ahead, of building new bridges, because Germany, to many Jews, is a place of uncertainty. We all know what happened in the past, and this presents a new light for the future.
Moritz Gröning, a German lawyer with family ties to the village, has been working with Alexander House to assure that visitors find a place of welcome.
This is a place where people who have long been very uncertain whether they can reconnect can just come and get a bit more comfort and take that as a starting point. And if you see that it is the right time for that.
So for this little lake house, a new chapter begins. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Thanks very much, Marissa. Well, that is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us, and have a great weekend.
I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
Hello. I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.